The trip to take only seconds, or at most minutes. Ben rode in his unlit coffin for what seemed like forever. He checked his chrono from time to time. Fortunately, its tiny screen was lit, and watched 10 minutes trickle by, then 20, then an hour. The only thing he heard was occasional clattering as the container's grippers traveled over debris or coupler-joined sections of rail. He shouted on 2 occasions for his father, but Luke was clearly too far away to hear. Ben could feel Luke out there, though, calm and unalarmed, so Ben himself had no reason to fret. He was just bored. 2 hours and 5 minutes into his trip, the container slowed. Ben breathed a sigh of relief. The container continued to decelerate, and within a minute, it came to a complete stop. Ben could see light glimmering along the edges of the lid. Then he heard voices speaking in the Keldor tongue, and the lid opened. The sudden light blinded him. Blind or not, he was ready for trouble. Using senses beyond sight, but he detected no hostile intent in the 3 nearest beings, even as they reached for him. He let one take his hand and guide him up and out of the container. Warm, humid air washed across him, all but his face, still enclosed in the breath mask, and he dropped to his feet on a rocky surface. As his vision cleared, Ben found himself in a stone tunnel, one obviously burned out of the stone rather than a natural formation. The walls were heat-fused rock, clear sign of tunneling devices that used a high-temperature mechanism such as laser drills. One end of the tunnel narrowed into a diameter just large enough to accommodate the containers and rails issued from it. The rails continued the length of the 60-meter tunnel and ended in an upraised loop. Charsey Saul's container was stopped at the loop, and beyond it, 5 meters away, was a blast door exit. Charsey Saul stood beside his container, speaking rapidly with 2 men and 1 woman, all Keldors, dressed as he was. They cast glances back to Luke, who was halfway between them and Ben, standing beside his container, nonchalantly leaning against it. 1 Keldor stood beside him. 2 of Ben's greeters left his side to walk to Charsey Saul's group. The 3rd, a woman, remained behind, eyeing Ben cautiously. Luke looked toward his son.
Restful trip?
The minutes flew by like hours.
Ben stretched, then looked at his Keldor companion.
You speak basic?
She looked mildly offended.
Of course.
I'm Ben Skywalker.
You were. Now you are not.
Ben gave her a puzzled frown.
Come again?
You will have to choose a new name here.
Why?
Because Ben Skywalker is dead.
After conferring, the black-robed Keldors, including Charsey Saul, led Luke and Ben through the blast door. The chamber in which they found themselves was roughly circular, some 20 meters in diameter, with blast doors set in the walls at regular intervals and a black stone support pillar in the center. The Keldors did not treat the Jedi as if they were prisoners. Their manner was civil, but uncertain. One of the blast doors opened into a tunnel that led to a much larger chamber, 40 meters or more in diameter, 10 meters high at the center, with 8 support columns arranged in a circle midway between the walls and the center of the room. Against the far wall was what Ben had looked for in vain in the Barrando Temple, a raised platform with a large, imposing chair upon it. The chair appeared to have been carved from white stone and had white cushions on the seat and back. Settling into it was a Keldor male, taller than many of the others. He had more wrinkles around his eyes and the corners of his mouth than most Keldors that Ben had seen. Other than his placement on the throne, there was no sign of rank about him. His robes were as simple and dark as everyone else's. Luke and Ben were led to stand before him. He looked down upon them, his expression quizzical. His voice was reedy, but not infirm.
Why are you here?
Luke gave him a nod of greeting.
We are here in search of answers.
Ah!
The enthroned Keldor nodded, as if satisfied.
A worthy goal at the end of one's life.
Luke frowned.
You intend to kill us? For what?
No, certainly not. You have come here. This is the place after life. The world below. The world after. You are already dead.
Ben spared a look at the other Keldors present. None of them reacted to the statement. Luke clearly decided not to pursue that subject further for the moment. May I assume you're Master Korozil?
I was in life. Now I am Huwak Dual Storanjan.
Luke frowned, considering. That does not sound like a name, especially a Keldor name. It didn't to Ben, either. Keldor names tended to follow a pattern similar to that found among Coruscanti humans. Personal name first, clan name second, with both names tending to be short, usually one or two syllables. Three or more was a rarity. The Keldors whom Ben had met always referred to themselves and one another by their full names, or by a title and a clan name.
It means the one who dwells in darkness, in our language, or the hidden one. It is my title, for I have no name at all. I have transcended not only life, but identity. You, too, will have to choose new names now that you are among us.
Luke gave him a look that suggested he regretted being displeasing. We won't be staying. The former Korozil smiled. It was not a cruel smile, but a sympathetic one.
There is no way to leave. You are with us forever. Seek your answers among us, but become reconciled to the fact that you will never take those answers away from here.
Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
Swearing under her breath, Jaina pulled on a robe and moved to the door of her quarters. She nearly tripped over a waste receptacle in the darkness and decided that it was good her observer hadn't seen that. It wouldn't do for word to spread that the Jedi could be klutzes like anyone else. In the outer chamber, at the door to the hall, she hit the button to turn on the lights and another to open the door. It slid up, revealing Jedi Tekli in the act of pressing the door chime button for the third time. Not waiting for an invitation, the Chadrafan Jedi, fur-covered with big ears and gnawing upper incisors that gave her a cute pet-like appearance that caused her no end of trouble with children, rushed in.
Darkmilt! Darkmilt!
She said. The word sent a thrill of coldness through Jaina's insides. Darkmeld was a word of Jaina's own invention, part of a plan she'd put into motion after her last conversation with Master Hamner. Only a few Jedi, whom Jaina trusted and who were not masters, knew the term, knew that it referred to Jaina's new circle of conspirators. An even smaller number of non-Jedi knew it. Jaina hit the button again to slide the door shut. She found herself whispering without meaning to.
What is it?
Tekli stood before Jaina's desk, putting her weight first on one foot, then the other, an unconscious dance of agitation.
I saw him.
Who?
I was at the prison. Master Silgal has a plan to keep pressure up on the authorities to let us examine Valen. She visits once per day, staying for an hour or two to annoy them, and I do so in the evenings.
So you saw Valen?
No, Jedi Helen.
Jaina blinked. Seth Helen? He's in prison?
No, he's outside it, dressed as a workman, entering the underground through a worker's access hatch.
Jaina whistled. He has to be evaluating the prison defenses, so he can break Valen out.
That was my thought. He didn't see me. I don't think he even felt me. I wasn't using any force abilities. I felt surprised when I saw him, but I suppressed it pretty quickly. He made no reaction suggesting he felt anything. I think I got away with it cold. I came straight here, straight to you.
Tekli began pacing, gesturing as she talked.
We have to have him. We can't study Valen, but if we can get Seth, study him without the government knowing we have him.
Wait. Jaina's mind raced. We need to be sure he has the same condition Valen does.
All evidence suggests it. What's more, he came back to Coruscant without notifying the temple he was here. And now he's staking out the facility where the only other Jedi who behaves like him is being held. Besides, if we're wrong, we can let him go.
Right. Jaina checked her chrono. It had been only 2 hours since Dab had awakened her with one of his random checks of her whereabouts. This meant that in all probability, she had several hours to act before he'd check in again. She should be able to sneak out for a while. All right, I'm going to mobilize some people I've contacted about our little dark-meld conspiracy. You need to set things up here so that when we bring Seth in, whether it's tonight or later, we have a secret place to hold and evaluate him.
Understood, understood.
Teckley nodded so fast it made her fur sway, and Jaina wondered what would happen if the Chadrafan were to drink a couple of cups of caff while in this state. Teckley moved to the door and reached up to slap the button.
Sorry to cost you sleep.
Don't worry. It's worth it. All of them dressed in inconspicuous garments of the sort favored by the middle class when traveling, they met in a tap calf a kilometer from Valen's prison. Jaina, Jag, Tahiri, and a lean woman with white hair and elegant, ageless features. Jaina introduced the last. Jag, this is Winter Selchew, my former babysitter. Winter, this is Jagged Fell, head of state of the Imperial Remnant.
Galactic Empire,
Jag corrected absently.
You're married to General Tycho Selchew?
Winter nodded.
And you're ex-intelligence, in addition to ex-babysitter.
She gave him a faint smile. I hate it that people have heard of me.
Well, your husband and my uncle are best friends. It makes some secrets hard to keep.
Jaina waved to get their attention.
I'll make this short. I've got the Jedi resources and ways in and out of the temple, but I'm going to be hobbled by having an observer. Jag, you have unlimited financial resources, at least by our standards.
Jag nodded.
I can't really be a despot if I'm not wasting the Empire's money.
Tahiri, you have the full range of Jedi abilities, which we'll need in order to handle Seth, and no observer hanging around your neck.
Jaina did not voice her next thought, that Tahiri had been very easy to convince to help on this mission. Tahiri hadn't been able to repair much of the damage she'd done in Jason's service. It apparently meant a lot to her to be able to help with another Jedi's mess.
Winter, you have intelligence skills and contacts. Between the four of us, we're the core of this operation. We need to set up an observation of Seth, secretly grab him at our earliest opportunity, and get him into the temple for Teckley to evaluate.
The others nodded. Tahiri looked doubtful.
And we have to do it without him being alerted to us. He's a Jedi Knight. This is not going to be like doing surveillance on a bail jumper.
Not a problem.
Winter held her data pad up.
On this is a shopping list. High on the list are holocam droids and security holocams. If it's mostly holocams watching him, he won't feel it in the Force.
Tahiri shook her head.
Problem. He may know the technique that allows him to fuzz out holocam feeds for a moment or two as he passes in front of them.
Jaina gave her a reassuring smile.
Not a problem. We still have the software we used to track Alima Rar when she was using that technique, back when she was sneaking around on the errant venture. We can plot Seth's movements even if he does that.
Jag slid a cred card across the table. It fetched up against Winter's forearm.
There should be enough there for your shopping trip. Let me know if you need more.
Winter pocketed the card.
This can't be traced back to you?
He shook his head.
I made sure it was clean. It's supposedly for gifts and surprises for Jaina. Things that shouldn't be traced back to a head of state's expense account.
Jaina looked crestfallen.
I'm not getting my presents?
The others looked at her. Unable to maintain the pose, she laughed.
You're just lucky I'm a low-maintenance woman,
she told Jag.
That I already knew.
Chapter 20 Calrissian Nunba Mines, Kessel.
In 2 days, the Solos, Calrissians, and Nian Nunba had much more data and a little more useful information. The drones, reinforced by a second shipment, continued tracing the webwork of tunnels and caverns deep within Kessel, and confirmed that the complex encircled the entire world. 6 YVH-1 combat droids, fresh from the Tendrondo Arms assembly plant, arrived and were immediately put into service. Transported into the cavern system through connections with the mines discovered by the sensor drones, they began investigation of the demolition mounds. Deployed in 2 droid teams, the first thing they discovered was that any time they approached the mounds, bogies arrived to investigate them. The bogies invariably flew through them, crashing the droid systems. The automata, unlike the sensor drones, eventually recovered from this electronic mistreatment, but when they continued their approach toward the mounds, the bogies returned,
Unable ever to reach the demolition mounds, the YVH droids retreated to a safe distance. One YVH pair, assigned to a cavern chosen as safe to destroy, utilized a long-distance military-grade missile launcher to fire on its mound from the comparatively safe distance of the cavern entrance. On Tendra's monitor, back at the mines, the Solos, Calrissians, and Nia Nunba watched the first explosives package, a concussion missile, roar from the weapon barrel barely visible at the bottom of the screen. The bright flare of its thrusters dwindled in the distance as it arced down to hit the ground mere meters from the mound. The missile exploded. Viewing the scene from the high magnification of the YVH droid's visual sensors, the humans in Sulliston saw the explosion kick up soil and shredded fungi from the ground. The antenna-shaped device did not even rock. The barrels in the explosives mound shifted a little, but did not otherwise react. Lando looked dour.
Not very promising.
Tendra keyed the comlink on her control board.
Next package, please.
She switched the microphone off and leaned back.
This will be a thermal detonator, one of the smaller ones YVH droids have as a basic option.
You sound like a speeder salesman, Han muttered.
The monitor showed the arms of the droid loading a different miniature missile into the launcher, then taking aim. Again, the missile flew on its ballistic trajectory from the weapon and arced down to land meters from the demolition mound. It, too, detonated. The monitor blanked, going to whiteness. Tendra and the others leaned forward, expectant, hoping that this wasn't just a comm glitch. For long moments, the screen remained white and silent. Then, gradually, holocam transmissions of sight and audio began to resume. First as bursts of static, and then as full-resolution sound and visuals. The images showed a cavern whose center raged on fire, a fungus-shaped cloud of black smoke rising from a scorched crater at its base, a corresponding burned area on the ceiling above. As the YVH droid turned its head for a panoramic view, the onlookers saw machinery against the cavern walls shattered into junk, some of it burning. But the destruction was nowhere near as total as it had been in the cavern whose destruction Han and Leia had witnessed. Lando whistled.
Frankly, I didn't expect that to work. Some difference in the explosive characteristics of thermal detonators.
Han's voice came as a distant murmur.
Temperature, probably.
This is good.
Tendra breathed a sigh of relief.
If we'd had to go to proton torpedoes, I don't know how many we could have gotten in time. But we manufacture these thermal detonators. We can get all we need, and fast.
Leia bent close to the monitor.
There, in the distance. Look at the bogies.
15 or 20 of them were swarming in the vicinity of the crater. Then, as a swirling cloud, they began flying toward the holocam view, toward the YVH droids.
Uh-oh.
Lando picked up the comboard's microphone.
5 and 6, pull out. Immediate full-speed retreat. Return to pickup zone.
The droids complied. The holocam view swung around, showing stony tunnel rocking as the droids ran from the cavern entrance. 30 seconds went by, and then the monitor went mostly dark. Diagnostics boxes along the sides began flashing red malfunction indicators. Tendra's expression turned unhappy.
Both offline.
Still, sweetie, it's a successful test.
Lando rubbed his hands together.
Get enough combat droids down there, and we can do it.
Han, solemn, shook his head.
How many is enough, old buddy? 100? 1,000? How many can you get here in a day or two?
Not that many.
What we can do, though...
Han frowned, concentrating. He moved to the monitor and entered the command to bring up the schematic of Kessel and its tunnels.
Here's what we do. We refit the Falcon and the Lady Luck to launch thermals instead of concussion missiles.
Nia Nunba spoke a few words, sounding indignant. Han didn't need Lando to translate.
Yeah, and the half a star. I also think we know some crotchety retirees who own their own starfighters and can get here on short notice.
Tendra's face brightened into a smile.
Right. We plot out the best paths through the tunnels.
Won't work, Leia said.
As the starfighters fly through and launch their detonators, the explosions will be taking place in just the sort of progressions we don't want them to.
Then her expression brightened.
Unless... we rig the thermal detonators so they don't blow up on impact, but on timer.
Yeah.
Lando's eyes scanned back and forth. obviously seeing something other than what was actually in front of him.
Mechanical timers, I think, not electronic. We don't want the bogies disrupting them. It can work.
Then his expression turned sad.
What is it, honey?
Tendra asked.
Time to spend a lot more credits.
Caverns of the Hidden One, Dorin.
They did call him the Hidden One, these other Baron Doe living in the caverns deep beneath Dorin's surface, and they did not refer to him in hushed tones, which Ben took as a good sign, an indication that they did not fear him as a god or a tyrant. But because the Hidden One was currently too busy administering this tiny subterranean kingdom to bother with time-consuming mundane tasks, the job of shepherding the Skywalkers around fell to the sage who had accompanied them to these caverns, combat instructor Charsay Saul. His first exploration of the cavern became the Skywalkers as well. Of course, he was now the former Charsay Saul. He called himself Chara and insisted that the Skywalkers do likewise. The three of them walked from chamber to chamber, exploring unhindered by the other Keldor's presence. Ben thought he had counted 20 different Keldors in 10 chambers and tunnels so far, but as they were all dressed alike, it was hard for him to tell. In addition to the arrival tunnel and the Hidden One's grand chamber, they had walked along a gallery tunnel with holes leading into private quarters. A large chamber where vegetables and grains of all sorts were grown in circular hydroponics vats, and a storeroom where primitive digging tools such as pickaxes and shovels were hung. Now they moved through a large chamber loaded with recycling equipment, waste and water recyclers, polymer decomposers, tiny foundries for durasteel and transparasteel. Obviously, Luke said, you've known about this place for some time before coming here.
I have, Chara nodded. It was nearly 20 years ago when Master Corazil, sensing that I might someday be suited to this existence, came to me. He swore me to secrecy and told me of the Hidden One, who then was former Takra Haz.
Ben snorted. It caused a touch of condensation to form on the inside of his breath mask, but the film quickly evaporated.
And the idea of living in a hole in the ground and pretending to be dead was just irresistible to you.
Luke gave Ben a now's not the time to mock look. Chara did not seem offended.
It's not an issue of pleasing ourselves. It's an issue of service. Service to the Baron Doe, and to the cause of knowledge.
Having completed the tour of this chamber, he led them back through the blast door and out into the hallway beyond.
And in a sense, you Jedi are responsible for it.
Luke smiled. I don't recall sending out a communication asking for arrangements like this.
Not you personally. Before your time, I was just a child when it happened, the day the Jedi disappeared from the galaxy.
Oh. Luke sobered. The Purge.
Yes.
The next chamber was not behind a blast door. The entryway was merely curtained. Chara brushed the black cloth aside and entered. He fumbled against the wall on one side and then the other before he found the glow rod activator switch. Light sprang up along the ceiling, revealing racks of depressingly identical black robes.
Ah, you'll want some of these, though they'll have to be adjusted for your diminutive height.
Ben grimaced.
Diminutive?
Chara switched the light off and led them back into the access tunnel.
Anyway, Master Takra Haz was horrified by this. All the Baron Doe were, so the story goes. But Takra Haz was profoundly affected. Perhaps he felt the deaths of the Jedi through the Force. Takra Haz was not so much distraught at the loss of individual life as at the loss of knowledge. Remember, at the time it was believed that all Jedi everywhere had died, that the Jedi Order had completely winked out. Fearing that the new Emperor would extend the same genocidal impulse to other Force-sensitive orders, Takra Haz sent many of the Baron Doe masters into hiding and thought about what to do next.
Ben looked around dubiously.
And what to do was to dig a hole in the ground.
Yes.
The next chamber, also behind curtains, proved to be a storehouse of preserved foods, all in bottles or cans. Ben recognized brand names from Dorin manufacturers. Chara continued.
As a repository of knowledge, if the Empire were to come and destroy the sages, a cell would survive, deep in the ground, and would be able to communicate its learning to others on the surface.
Luke frowned. Communicate how?
The rails that brought us here are also direct comlink connections with the surface, not just with the temple, but other places. And should the rails be destroyed, the Hidden One knows a force technique of mind-to-mind communication.
Telepathy? Luke sounded dubious.
Yes.
Interesting. I've experienced communications through the Force from loved ones light years away, but they tend to be emotional surges, perhaps a few words, perhaps a vision. Exchanges of anything but emotions and general impressions are impossible to maintain for any useful length of time. That's not the sort of communication through which you can teach all your techniques.
Chara shrugged. This technique is known only to the High Masters of the Baron Doe.
Luke looked thoughtful. I'd love to learn it. I'll have to speak to Corozil.
Corozil is dead. You will have to speak to the Hidden One.
Yes. Ben tried to steer the conversation back to Chara's story.
So, the old master, Takra Haz, eventually decided on making this underground shelter.
Chara nodded.
He used tunneling equipment to dig the tunnel by which we entered. It's very long, some 200 kilometers, circling and winding. It eventually reached natural caverns that he decided to use as the center point for his complex. The first tunnel took years to dig, and the caverns took more years to modify.
They reached and passed by a communal sauna steam chamber. The next chamber beyond seemed to be a sort of sauna, not currently in use. Why such a long tunnel? Luke asked.
A practical choice. Takra Haz's intent was to recruit only those Baron Doe and servants who were fully dedicated to the cause. But in case someone changed his mind, well, it is impossible for any Keldor or human to leave by that tunnel. To crawl 200 kilometers, you couldn't carry enough food or drink, and would die in the attempt. Should someone put together a viable means to ascend through the tunnel, like the little rail vehicles they use during construction days to go back and forth, the Hidden One can, at the touch of a switch or issuance of a special command through the Force, trigger a series of explosions along the tunnel's length, sealing it forever.
Ben felt a little trickle of worry.
So, how did Dad and I get out?
You've already been told. You don't.
Char looked serene, but sympathetic.
Like the rest of us, you are here forever. For your own sanity, you must resign yourselves to the idea that you are already dead, that you now exist only to preserve knowledge.
Not far from the Armand Isard Correctional Facility, Coruscant.
Under an assumed name, Winter rented quarters in the residential building nearest the prison in which Valen was being held, in which Valen was stored, since someone frozen in carbonite needed only monitoring, not a cell and sustenance. The prison itself was an artifact of early Imperial-era architecture. Surrounded by a comparatively narrow plaza, which would serve as a kill zone for guards should prisoners escape, it consisted of a tall, tiered single building with an exercise yard surrounded by 15-meter walls, all made of black synthstone. Synthstone towers with sniper's nests rose from the corners, spotlights bright enough to give a sunburn to a target 50 meters away were mounted atop the towers and at intervals along the walls. Otherwise, the only bright points to be seen were on the upper reaches of the building, where lit viewports indicated the quarters of the warden and senior officers. It was a place of gloom and depression, and the dark-mailed conspirators' new quarters looked down upon it from a distance of half a kilometer. In those viewports, Jaina's team placed holocams with powerful zoom functions. On nearby desks and tables were banks of monitors for the holocams deployed to watch Seth Helen. Monitoring had been reasonably successful. Using holocam-equipped mouse droids, holocams surreptitiously mounted on government buildings surrounding the prison, and even data feeds stolen from surveillance satellites, the team had not only watched Seth perform his workman deception, but had used a mouse droid to follow the rogue Jedi to his temporary quarters, a kilometer from their own stakeout. All the dark-mailed conspirators took shifts at the stakeout quarters, even Jaina, when she felt she was safe in sneaking away from Dab for a few hours. She had done so this night, and she and Jag shared duty at the monitors. Jaina looked up from the screen, displaying the notes the others had been keeping.
His timing is as steady as public transportation on Kuat.
Jag, leaning back in his chair with his eyes closed, nodded.
Seems to be. The 8 hours prior to dawn, he's in his workman disguise, mostly underground in front of the prison. The next 8 hours, he's at his quarters, presumably asleep. The next 8 hours we can't reliably track yet, but he seems to use them to acquire gear and maybe get in touch with contacts.
We need to find out what he's doing in front of the prison. Digging a tunnel? Planting high explosives? Surely he's not that crazy.
We do.
Jag rubbed his eyes and then looked at Jaina.
Armand Izard? Any relation to Isan Izard?
Her father. She sent him to prison, not this prison. Isan Izard was one of the officers who had acted as temporary rulers of the Empire after Palpatine had died. Earlier in her career, she had won a private power struggle with her equally treacherous father. He had been executed. She had replaced him as Director of Imperial Intelligence.
I think it was some sort of act of malicious humor rather than contrition on her part to name a prison after him. Bureaucratic inertia has kept it from being renamed, or repainted, or torn down. Well, the New Republic only conquered Coruscant, what, 36 years ago? The century's still young.
He waved the subject away.
At dawn, when Seth leaves, Winter and I are going to do just what you said. See what he's been doing down there.
Good.
Got a question for you.
All right.
What do you think about bringing Mirax into this?
Jaina sat back and considered.
Well, she has skills, useful contacts, some funds, and plenty of motivation.
Right.
But she'd need to keep it a secret from Korn. He's her husband, a former security investigator, and a Jedi Master. A hard man to keep secrets from.
Also right.
And she and Korn are very, very busy right now.
That was an understatement. Each of the senior Horns was doing everything possible to free Valen from his carbonite imprisonment and return him to the Jedi Order for evaluation. Korn was calling in favors from his careers before joining the Jedi, from veterans of Corellian Security and Starfighter Command. The latter offered more possibility of success, because many of his colleagues from his piloting days were now senior officers in the Galactic Alliance military. But so far, they had demonstrated little effectiveness in this task, as the military officers and other government leaders supporting Valen's sentence were even more powerful. Mirax, similarly, was cashing in favor she had accumulated over the years, but her contacts, chiefly traders and smugglers, were having even less luck than Korin's. Jaina had seen Korn several times at the temple since Valen's sentencing, and it was clear that, as much as he tried to spare his fellow Jedi the pain he felt, he was suffering. Mirax had to be in similar shape. That decided matters for Jaina.
Let's designate her an in-case-of-emergency resource. Maybe get Winter to approach her on a preliminary basis.
Jag nodded. Jaina's comlink beeped,